Hey, it's Dr. Rupi, host of the Doctor's Kitchen podcast, where we talk about food, medicine, and how to improve your health today. The podcast is currently being sponsored by MasterChef Australia, only on W, and it starts on the 1st of August. And W is also where you can watch all the global MasterChefs first. Check it out on Freeview, Freesat, Sky, and Virgin Media, as well as UK TV Play. Go check it out.
Welcome back. Coming up on this week's show, all the news about La Liga coming to ESPN. We have the details about the championship playoffs. MLS gets a boost from a big TV ratings weekend. Our heads up about the final day of the Premier League season and your feedback in the listener mailbag segment. I'm Christopher Harris, aka The Gaffer, joined alongside co-host Kartik Krishnar. You're listening to the World Soccer Talk podcast, and every week we talk about what hardcore soccer fans want to hear about, which is a lot of the TV news, streaming news, our favorite commentators, our favorite analysts, really kind of talking about our enjoyment of the game. Sometimes we're not happy, sometimes we're always honest, but sometimes we're disappointed with the coverage, other times we're just wowed by it. And I guess the wow part of this, Kartik, let's start right off the bat, right? This is a story that both you and I have been working on pretty closely, talking to our contacts since December of 2020. And that is the story about La Liga. And it's been a story that we've discussed on this podcast previously in terms of just the trials and tribulations of this league that was, which is still one of the best leagues in the world. But unfortunately, due to distribution and carriage problems that beIN Sports have encountered, which a lot of that can be resulted from beIN Sports trying to go against Comcast and going against DirecTV, fighting for distribution, and that's really coming back to hurt them. And that's where we're at, Kartik, with this story and the news that La Liga, in a massive deal, this is probably the biggest deal of the year thus far, is coming home to ESPN. What was your first reaction when the news, although while we're recording this, it's still before it's officially announced, but both you and I, and now I think the whole soccer world knows that it's happening. What was your first reaction?
Yeah, that's tough to gauge because I think there have been, because of our reporting and because you and I have been reporting on this story, we've actually known for some time it was inevitable. So I don't know what my first reaction was. What I will say is, and I hate to be a broken record, some of you might be new listeners to the podcast, so you haven't heard this, but I have said, I don't know, maybe every fourth episode for the last 3 years, La Liga has to get off beIN. Because you are in a position where the Premier League is the undisputed top dog among European leagues in the United States. But La Liga, which I think historically has been second, has now been superseded in many ways by Serie A and by Bundesliga just by the virtue of them being on mainstream, what we would consider mainstream carriers. In the Bundesliga's case, Fox and then ESPN, and now in the case of Serie A, ESPN moving to CBS. So, and I think there are a lot of newer fans of the sport, or even old-line fans of the sport whose preferences might change, that have not watched La Liga teams play in league action in many, many years. They see them when they're in Europa League on CBS. They see them when they're on Champions League on CBS. But and they see them when they play American teams in friendlies over the summer. But that's about it. So I think this is a strategic move for La Liga that gets them back in the shop window in the United States. We know fandom has changed a lot in this country the last few years, Chris. We've covered it. We've experienced it. There are so many people that if I talk about the Premier League in 2015 or 2010, they don't know what I'm talking about, or even talk about international tournaments from back then. So there's a whole segment of so fans that have never been exposed properly to La Liga. And at one point in time, La Liga was getting its games on ESPN when Bundesliga was stuck on Gold TV, and Serie A was on Gold TV also at the time. So there's been a change in where kind of which leagues are getting priority based on their rights holders in the country and getting the bandwidth with the American audience. So I think that this is incredible news for La Liga, huge news, much needed news. In terms of BN, maybe we'll get into that later, because obviously this is going to create a major pivot that they're going to have to make in order to stay relevant to the soccer fans.
My first reaction was hallelujah. This has finally happened. Because just like you, Kartik, I feel in many ways that the average soccer fan in the United States has been shortchanged. They've been shortchanged because many of them have not had the accessibility to watch a lot of these teams play in the league. And while your favorite one of your favorite leagues, which I know is, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners know, one of your favorite leagues is the Bundesliga. One of my favorite leagues is La Liga, and for many years I've enjoyed watching. I mean, Sevilla, Villarreal, of course. I mean, Real Madrid and Barcelona, but I mean, so many stories, so many wonderful teams, and such a great brand of football in terms of very technical. Each of the stadiums has a different charm about them, a history, a very rich history in many ways. But a lot of viewers in the United States have missed that, other than, like you said, Champions League, Europa League, where we would see these teams to a much greater mainstream audience. And it's perfect timing. I think this is perfect timing for La Liga. I'm sure La Liga would have liked this to have happened sooner, but imagine the possibilities. El Clasico on ABC. I mean, has La Liga ever been on available on over-the-air television for a live El Clasico? No, it's been on beIN Sports, beIN Sports en Español. Prior to that, it would have been, what, Gol TV, right? I mean, and prior to that...
Fox Sports World.
Fox Sports World, over a decade ago. So this is an opportunity for La Liga to put their name on the map, to really show how good of a league this is, and to increase awareness of that league. And at the same time, I think for ESPN, this is a massive coup, Kartik. This is, if you thought that ESPN Plus was great with the Bundesliga and MLS, and the USL and International Champions Cup and those leagues and tournaments, this is a major coup to get La Liga on ESPN and ESPN Plus, because it's one of those things that the contract between beIN Sports and La Liga was scheduled to run all the way through to 2024. So I have no idea how ESPN managed to do this, but ESPN meeting with La Liga and beIN Sports, we're able to figure out a way to make this work. So I don't know what the numbers were, but in terms of what it took to convince beIN Sports to let go of this one. But some of the numbers I am hearing, which we don't get into numbers that much on this podcast, that's more of a sports business daily, kind of more of the sports business publications. But some of the numbers that have been thrown out there for this deal, a rumor to be $175 million a year for 8 years. Now, put that into comparison with the Bundesliga deal on ESPN, which is roughly $30 million a year for 6 years. Serie A's new CBS deal, which is $70 million a year for 3 years. And the Champions League and Europa League combined, which is CBS and Univision combined. That one is $140 million a year. So $175 million a year, if true, for 8 years, that's an enormous amount of money. We know that ESPN, their goal for 2021 is to double the number of subscribers to ESPN Plus. This goes a long way to making that happen. Kartik, what are the implications of this? What does this mean for CBS? What does this mean for NBC in terms of their interest in rights for the rest of this year? I guess the Be In Sports part of it we'll probably save for another podcast. We'll maybe go into more depth next week. But what is this deal for La Liga and ESPN? What does that mean now for CBS and NBC, in your opinion?
CBS has acquired... so I guess CBS's play might be they have to go after the Premier League. I think Serie A really helps them. But right now you have the balance maybe tipped back towards ESPN in that battle. So if you look at the profile of ESPN versus CBS in terms of what they had acquired, I had actually said, and I know this got a lot of pushback because people love ESPN. I mean, there seems to be more ESPN fans than fans of CBS or NBC. That with the acquisition of the two South American leagues they had and CONCACAF properties, which put them in the door in North America, along with Serie A, having NWSL, when we talk about the television ratings later, we'll talk about how well that did again this weekend for CBS over the air, and having Champions League, they were ahead of ESPN in terms of their overall profile. They have something for fans of Europe. They have something for fans of South America. They have something for fans of North America. They have a lot for women's fans as well. Now ESPN is tipping the scales back with La Liga, right? Because they've got the Bundesliga, they got La Liga, they have the Eredivisie, they have a lot of U.S. properties, MLS, USL. They have national team games on both the men's and women's sides for the U.S., maybe a little lighter on the South America to compete with CBS, but they offset that with maybe more in terms of North America. So I think it tips the scales, the balance a little bit back towards ESPN. If we're looking for overall profiles to drive subscriptions, CBS now goes after the Premier League, and I don't think ESPN has the bandwidth for the Premier League, quite frankly. They have the money, especially with all these recent – well, maybe they don't have the money with all the
– No, they have it. They have it.
They have it.
They have it.
Because they're cutting
Disney
personalities, right? They're effectively capping the salaries of writers and on-air personalities. But I don't think they have the bandwidth for the Premier League. And I don't think it would be a good thing for the Premier League to be on ESPN. We can get into that another time.
Yeah.
I think.
Let's get to that now, though, too. I mean, because that's a very good point. I mean, you look at a typical weekend of Saturday and Sunday games, and you've got the Bundesliga games mostly in the morning, early morning. Yes, you have La Liga games throughout the day, but most of the big games are at the 3 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday or a Sunday. So you have most of the Real Madrid games, most of the Barcelona games, and Sevilla and Atleti. Most of those games usually are noon or 3 p.m. Around about those times. So if you're ESPN Plus, you have unlimited bandwidth. You can have as many games as you want to stream if you can pay the price, I mean, as a broadcaster to acquire those. But if you did have the Premier League, I mean, the Premier League to me is more of a morning, Saturday morning, and yes, you have the games that kind of the big games at Sunday at 11:30, and oftentimes Saturday at 12:30. They could bring on the Premier League. I mean, talk about enormous amount of money. I mean, and that would be game over almost at that point. But they could do it if they really wanted to. But I'm like you, Kartik. Now that they've gotten La Liga, I just don't think there's enough. You know what I mean? How do they go ahead and do an ESPN FC? Like ESPN FC every night would be like 3 hours of discussion and highlights and analysis.
Well, unless the idea is for the Premier League, I'd say this is, again, is the Premier League focused on keeping their games on linear television in the United States, or are they looking for the most money? Given all the stuff about the ESL lately and all of that, who knows? Maybe the money equation has changed.
I think with the European Super League and just how the clubs, the Big Six, have been pushing for big-time money and are looking at all the money they've lost from COVID, I'm sure the Premier League would talk about reach and distribution and television, but ultimately it's whoever makes the biggest bid, the highest bid. They're going after the money.
NBC and CBS are going to give them bigger reach and more availability because ESPN is not going to show the Premier League. You're not going to have nearly all the people who are complaining about Peacock now. You're going to have if it goes to ESPN, you'll have maybe two games on television a weekend.
Well, that's a good point, Kartik. So you take La Liga and say, okay, let's have El Clasico on ABC, and then let's go ahead and have the Madrid derby. You mean, and this have Sevilla against Barcelona in these games, and sporadically you'll have some of these games on television. That bandwidth-wise, there is limited then, right? Because it's oftentimes it's mid-afternoon or maybe lunchtime, Eastern time. And then if you do have the Premier League at the same time, then it's okay, how do you fit these games in? You've got so many games, unless you're going all streaming.
You're going to have to go all streaming because they have, again, the big consideration with ESPN, which is not as much of a consideration with NBC at all, and is not as much of a consideration with CBS as college sports. And I just do not see how ESPN can show games on Saturdays unless it's the very early morning kickoff, 7:30 a.m. Eastern time kickoff in the Premier League. And then, obviously, although I guess they got a game on ESPN last week, a Dortmund-Leipzig match, right? That was a 9:30 a.m. Eastern time kickoff. Yeah. So I guess maybe at certain points in the season they can do it.
It's a rarity, though.
Yeah,
right.
It's a rarity. Whereas CBS, their deck of college sports has been contracting and will further contract in future years. And NBC basically has tier two college sports, with the exception of Notre Dame football, which doesn't really get in the way of any Premier League broadcasts.
So by ESPN getting La Liga, it sounds like we're in agreement that gives the opportunity for either NBC or CBS to get the rights to the Premier League, which will be coming up for bid in the next few weeks to the next couple of months. I mean, that's good. Now that the UK rights, which looks like it's going to be renewed by Sky Sports, BT Sport, and Amazon in the UK, once that's done, then the focus goes to international rights. So it's likely that it's going to be a race between CBS and NBC, unless there's an outside party. So whether it's an Apple TV or it's an Amazon or somebody of that sort, but it's most likely CBS and NBC. And with NBC being the incumbent, having a track record, you would think that it would still stick with NBC in terms of those rights. But CBS is a new player. And if CBS got the Premier League, then that's a whole new ball game for CBS and Paramount Plus. It really is exciting times in these soccer streaming wars, because a lot of these games will probably end up on streaming, whether it's the Premier League, whether it's La Liga, whether it's MLS, which those discussions will probably happen in the summer to start seeing who else outside of Univision, ESPN, and Fox are interested in rights. But it's just a fascinating time in the world of soccer.
One other quick point. Keep in mind, in terms of the Premier League, and I know we've said this before, CBS has a lot of personalities that work for other networks, that are working Champions League for them, that work for other networks that are rights holders in various locations, particularly the UK, for the Premier League. So if they acquired the Premier League rights, they would probably have to acquire a whole new set of personalities. One exception is Clive Tilsley, who has not called many Premier League matches in his career, which I think was a shock to you and me, Chris, when we found that out.
Yep.
Because he had always done ITV, who were supposed to, I don't want to get into it, were supposed to be the Premier League rights holders and initially, but weren't. Because he's been contracted to ITV, he hasn't done many games. So they would have that, but they would have to build a whole new studio team, build out a lot of other commentators other than Clive Tilsley. So that may be more prohibitive in terms of them just flipping the switch. Because I know people have said to me privately, Chris, oh, well, if CBS got the Premier League, they already have the infrastructure built because they have this great studio in London. But
they've got the World Feed, though. You and I know how good the World Feed is from the Premier League's point of view. And NBC definitely mixed things up by having some of their own announcers in the stadiums. And most of the listeners, I think, love that combination. It's gotten a little bit old and tired for me, at least. Which I don't want to even go down that path. But it could be World Feed. And CBS, we know that they've done the Champions League from London. From this past year, it's been all London based with a lot of London based analysts and experts. The Guillaume Balagas, the Rafa Honigsteins, the Peter Schmeichels, I mean, some of these people would not be available on weekend matches, but it's out there, Kartik. It's definitely a possibility. But let's move forward because we've got a lot to get to. And again, listeners, thank you for your patience. Thank you for your loyalty in terms of listening to this podcast. I think most of you who've been listening for several months now, if not longer, have been up to speed on La Liga, probably more so than the average soccer fan, and has had a huge heads up to what's happening. So for you, the listener, that news about La Liga and ESPN may not be so startling, but for the vast majority of soccer fans who are not plugged into this podcast, they're probably absolutely shocked and horror or pleasure at knowing that La Liga is moving to ESPN. Right, Kartik, let's move on to recommendations of what to watch this weekend. I'll let you go first. What's your recommended match to watch this weekend?
Yeah, so I've got, and I know you want to discuss it also, the UEFA Women's Champions League final, which is Chelsea against Barcelona, Emma Hayes. Also, they won WSL this past week, held off Man City. And I give NBCSN a lot of credit. They showed a lot of the important matches down the business end of the WSL season for both Chelsea and Manchester City, the two teams that were chasing the pack. So that's one recommendation. The other would be Juve versus Inter. Juve are up against it. They're going to have to see out the rest of this season, which includes a Coppa Italia final against Atalanta. With Pirlo as the manager, they are sitting fifth. And now Antonio Conte returns to Juventus with the champions, with the Scudetto winners, his Inter team. So I think there's a lot of high drama there. That's noon on Saturday on ESPN Plus.
Yeah, and the women's UEFA Champions League final, as of recording this podcast, we believe it's going to be on UEFA.tv, which is their free streaming service. So last time there was the women's Champions League final, CBS picked up the rights to that at the last minute, but this time they're not going to. So it's most likely going to be on UEFA.tv, which is their free streaming service. My pick for this weekend, I think, is actually going to be the championship playoff match between the first leg, Bournemouth against Brentford. Two teams that are really fun to watch, high quality, good brand of football. I think it's going to be a close one. I mean, actually, I think Brentford's got a good chance. They were there last year in the playoffs, and ultimately they lost in the final. But I think that one for me, which is going to be on Monday live on ESPN Plus. So check out worldsoccertalk.com, either the website or the Soccer TV Schedules app on Android or Apple to get the TV listings and streaming listings, right? ESPN Plus, and then the kickoff time on that. Kartik, real quickly on this one, because we've spent a lot of time on La Liga, which is the biggest news of the week. But in terms of the I'll go through this real fast. The TV streaming news. So, like I said, I mentioned Brentford and Bournemouth in the championship playoffs. The two other teams of interest are Barnsley and Swansea City. They make up the four teams in the playoffs. All games will be live on ESPN Plus. And then after the two-leg series has ended, the final will be played on Saturday, May 29th at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. I think most listeners, especially if you're American, probably are going to be going for Barnsley with Daryl DK against Swansea, and best of luck to Barnsley as a Swansea fan. I'm excited to watch those playoffs, and that's my recommendation for the weekend on Monday.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting, I think, for viewers who maybe haven't watched these clubs. Brentford always has players. A lot of the listeners know I regularly contribute to TalkSport in the UK as a correspondent covering this specific league, the Championship. And it's amazing that every time we talk about Brentford, we end up talking about the other league, the Premier League, right, the top division, because there's so many Brentford guys who make an impact in the Premier League. So even if you're not interested in these four clubs, you might want to watch, as you recommended, the Bournemouth-Barnsley match, because the Bournemouth-Brentford match, because Brentford always places guys at the next level. Ivan Toney is the next guy that side. Just this season, we've seen Ollie Watkins and Saeed Benarama come into the Premier League and have a huge impact. Last season, two seasons ago, we saw it with Neil Mappe. Last season, we saw it with Konsa at the back for Aston Villa. So every single year, Brentford is producing Premier League level players. And of course, Bournemouth, the team that Premier League fans are familiar with.
And then the other piece of news is that on Sunday, May 23rd, it's the final day of the Premier League season. And all of the games will be featured as part of their Championship Sunday. The games will be across NBC, NBCSN, USA, CNBC, Telemundo, Universo, Peacock, and the Golf Channel. And with this one, though, Kartik, I think it's down to the race for the Champions League. And I think that's all that's left in terms of being determined. And oftentimes too, like the last game of the season, you'll see some of the clubs wearing their new kits for the next season. So it's not going to be, I think, the biggest championship finale by any means. But it's been a long season, and it's been relatively decent. And this might be entertaining. I'm trying to be positive on this, but the race for the Champions League spots and Europa League spots definitely will be interesting. All right, TV ratings. This was a huge weekend last weekend for soccer in the United States because we had games on every single major over-the-air network last Saturday. We had games on NBC, CBS, ABC, and Fox. And the ratings are in for these numbers, for these games. The biggest one was on the English language side was Chelsea against Man City. 1.04 million viewers on NBC and Universo combined. The El Tráfico, the LA Derby between LA Galaxy and LAFC, which was actually a really good game and excellent atmosphere in the stadium. That was 695,000 viewers on Fox and Fox Deportes combined. Massive number for Major League Soccer there. Portland against Seattle. So you got the Cascadia Derby, 620,000, and this is part of a doubleheader on ABC. And then Miami, Inter Miami against Atlanta, 557,000 as the earlier game in that doubleheader. Then you had the NWSL Challenge Cup final, which was on CBS, and that one had 534,000. Last but not least, West Brom against Arsenal. A rare Sunday game on NBC, and that was 483,000. Kartik, from these numbers, is there anything here that pops out at you that you find interesting?
Yeah, MLS beat the Premier League head-to-head. And to me, it's because they had Seattle in one match and Atlanta in the other. So I've said time and again, and the LA Derby number kind of does surprise me, it being that high, but I think if you put that up against other soccer match in the mid-afternoon, it would not do as well as matches involving Atlanta and Seattle. There are only two MLS teams, I think, that have intrigue a national following, and it's Seattle and it's Atlanta. And I know MLS people want to push New York teams and LA teams, but I don't think they quite have the impact. Although, again, the LA Derby number was pretty high. It surprised me. But so that's the big takeaway. Again, it kind of reaffirms my view that if MLS is going to be competitive, and I know that it's all about parity and people want all 20, I don't know how many teams are on MLS now, I have lost track, all 20-something teams to be on constantly and give everybody fairness. I'm MLS, and I've got a broadcast deal. I'm putting Seattle and Atlanta and Portland to a lesser extent on every week.
Yeah, that's the thing about MLS so far this season is that I think I've watched every weekend. I've watched probably more Major League Soccer this season so far than any other season in several years. I mean, for the first few weeks of the season. And what I would say is that the games I have watched, I mean, not everyone has been a good game. Some of them have been kind of relatively boring, but you get that with any league that you see. But the big factor for me is the atmosphere in the stadiums and seeing the crowds. I mean, yes, it's limited in many occasions. They will be opening up to full capacity for some of the stadiums later this month. But that is a big difference compared to games in Europe. And, of course, a lot of that is down to the vaccination in the United States being ahead of the rest of the world. But from a pure watching the game and hearing the fans and the level of excitement and it actually being authentic, natural sounds from the stadium and not piped in audio, for me, it's a deciding factor. It's enjoyable. It's different, right? And the level of the football I've seen has been good. There's been a couple of games where it's been okay. Some of the refereeing decisions, which it's interesting for me watching these, is that how VAR is used less often, which is a good thing, except there's so many instances I've seen this season in a relatively short season in MLS where there's such a blatant mistake and the VAR is not being, well, there's no, VAR is not catching the mistakes. So there are mistakes happening. I'm not talking about offsides, but I'm talking about penalty decisions, handballs, these types of things, which are so blatant. The referee misses it. It's, to me, a clear and obvious error. We know that VAR is watching the games, and for whatever reason, they're not going back and making the right call. So VAR is less of an influence in MLS, which is good because it's free-flowing. But as a neutral soccer fan, and I'm watching this, I'm like, how? If you're using VAR, but then not actually using it to correct the mistakes, then what's the point of having VAR? So, yeah, anyway, but it's been overall very entertaining, and this has been one of the most enjoyable MLS seasons I've seen for the first few weeks, at least, in quite some time. Listener mailbag, Dave Roberts. In every sport, in every league, there's been one transformative figure who helped cement that league or sport in the public's consciousness and helped turn that sport from something cute into something people could rally behind. Now, Kartik, just as an aside, this one's a really good one. And let's see if you're thinking along the same lines as I am on this one. So Dave Roberts continues. He says, yet that figure never, ever came along overnight. Let's take a look, shall we? Baseball, for example, was first organized in 1876, but that sport didn't have its first transformative figure until 1914, when Babe Ruth signed his first professional contract. That was 38 years after baseball was organized. The NHL was organized in 1917, but Wayne Gretzky didn't come along until 1978. 61 whole years passed. The NBA, that league was formed in 1946, but its first transformative figure, arguably Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, didn't sign the contract until 1969. Pro basketball was 23 years old at that point.
I can argue that point. I can argue on that.
Okay. Well, in terms of soccer, though, we're sticking to soccer here.
The
NFL was formed in 1920. Joe Namath didn't come along until 1965. 45 years, two world wars, the Korean War, the Beatles on Ed Sullivan, and the Kennedy assassination passed before American football really became a national sport and part of the public's consciousness thanks to this blue-eyed, handsome man. And now soccer. The English Football League was organized in 1888. It can be argued that its first true transformative figure was Sir Stanley Matthews. He went pro in 1932. 44 whole years had to pass before someone of His Majesty had to come along. If you're not getting my point, it's this. Soccer is still a young game in terms of being a professional sport in the United States. In Babe Ruth's days, there was the American Soccer League, and maybe if he decided to hit a ball with his feet instead of with a stick, soccer in the States today would be different. So, Kartik, let's not go down the NFL rabbit hole on this one, but let's stick to soccer. Do you agree with Dave? And, you mean, are we still waiting for that transformative figure in American soccer?
Yeah. And we haven't produced that person. Now, the question is, you could argue that that there was an awareness of the sport that came with Beckham signing in MLS that was not there before.
Correct.
In terms of the sport outside of the national team, everybody's known about the World Cups. I would say going back to even 66, and obviously, especially starting in 94 with the U.S. hosting and 98 onward. But I think 2007 was really important in terms of MLS bringing David Beckham to the league and people being aware that there was a viable top flight league in this country. But I don't know what it takes. Look, I worked in the NASL when we brought Marco Senna over, we brought Raul over, we brought Joe Cole over. And all that stuff moves the needle among soccer geeks, but it doesn't move it among other people. So maybe you need an American player that breaks through and is a global superstar. But then I think about non-team sports. So this is different. Even in cycling, Lance Armstrong didn't make it necessarily mainstream. A lot of Olympic sports where Americans dominate, individual sports, they didn't make it mainstream. The flip side of this is tennis, when Connors and McEnroe and later Sampras and Agassi and Courier were winning tournaments, tennis was fairly watched, men's tennis in the U.S., since it's been dominated by arguably the greatest generation of players, you know, with the Federers and the Nadals, etc., Djokovic and Andy Murray, it has been less popular in the United States. Maybe you need a genuine American star is the point.
All right. So we've got a difference of opinion here, Kartik, because what I read into this, and it's an excellent suggestion by Dave in terms of that we need a transformative figure. And I think David Beckham was one of those people. If David Beckham can't do it, you mean possibly no one can, unless it's an American. You mean if it is, yes. I don't know, an American David Beckham, so to speak. But I would argue that, I mean, soccer in the United States has been around since the late 1800s. Most people don't realize that, right? It's the late 1800s, early 1900s. In the 1910s, 20s, 30s, 40s. There were leagues. There were professional leagues in the Northeast. There were teams that came from England and from Europe that traveled to the United States to play friendly games. And yes, the leagues, you know, many of them went out of business. And then in the 60s, and then the late 60s, and then into the 70s, NASL. Hang on, let me finish. NASL came along, but that transformative figure, Kartik, was Pelé. I mean, you've got the world's best player in the history of the sport. I mean, in the history of the sport, and then you've had that transformative figure. You've actually had two transformative figures, and both of them have not been able to crack the American, you mean, culture, mainstream culture. So if those two can't do it, I don't think anyone can.
I was just going to point out, I think you're right on that, but in the era prior, Dave mentions Stanley Matthews. The era immediately prior to Sir Stanley Matthews turning pro, this is actually significant in this discussion. The ASL was poaching players from the English First Division and the Scottish First Division. There were a lot of players coming, top pros at the time, coming to play here. And ironically, you know, the Great Depression begins in 1929. The ASL, the first ASL, collapses kind of at the same time or a year or two after Stanley Matthews transforms the English First Division. So historically, the events could have changed, and actually the ASL may have been the dominant league still, and Sir Stanley Matthews would have come and played in the U.S.
Wow.
A couple of years later.
Yeah. Which
in Fall River or wherever. So
yeah.
That's actually something. And once you mentioned the ASL, I realized there was an actual tie into all of this. And once Dave mentioned the ASL. So we've had soccer here, you're right, all this time. And does that transformative figure have to be American? Well, I guess if Pelé and David Beckham couldn't do it, then I don't know who could. Actually,
yeah,
there's no one. Maybe,
yeah, yeah. You go down the list though too. I mean, you've got Franz Beckenbauer, you've got Bobby Moore, you've got Gerd Müller, You've got
Cruyff.
Johan Cruyff.
Cruyff is the most famous, I mean, is, but maybe now in hindsight, more famous than all of them. Pelé as a player, but Cruyff, I think, had more of an impact on the sport as a whole. One of the most important figures in the history of this sport.
Yeah, especially the way that the game is played, and you look at Barcelona. Played, yeah. So we've had those transformative figures. I just don't see it cracking. And again, too, maybe it has to be an American, but. I mean, Pulisic's definitely going far, and a lot of these players are coming through the system. But I'm not so sure we're going to have that transformative figure that's an American.
Real quickly on the basketball thing with Dave was
no.
This relates to soccer.
Okay, make it quick because we have a lot to get to.
And I actually I grew up a Milwaukee Bucks fan, so I know about Kareem going to the Bucks in '69. I don't think it moved the needle very much for the NBA. NBA was still, and it was the one sport I really liked growing up, other than soccer. So it was tough to watch NBA games in Florida. I don't think the NBA hit the mainstream the way Dave may think it did until Michael Jordan, maybe Bird and Magic. So I would put the NBA much further down, add another 20 years to that, okay. 23 years. So that, as it relates to soccer, is there were people we think may have been transformative in soccer history, like he thinks Kareem was transformative in the NBA's history. I think maybe that person hasn't come yet. So maybe it is I don't want to say the name, Christian, but it could be him. I don't know. It could be. Pulisic. Chelsea wins the Champions League. I think every American is rooting for Chelsea, except for me because I'm a Man City supporter. But I think every American other than me is rooting for Chelsea. And that might be one of the moments, particularly with it being on CBS network television, that sparks it.
It could be one of the first steps in that building block. I mean, there's a long way to go to get to that point. But I think winning the World Cup would be that transformative figure, the captain that raises that trophy. And that does not look likely anytime in our near future. It could happen, but it's unlikely right now. But that's the type of thing that would be transformative, I think. And if that's not, then this call the whole thing off because it's never going to happen. But let's move on because we've got a lot of mailbag today. Greg says, not sure you two realize it, especially Kartik, but the points you make on the podcast last week about NBC taking the side of American football ownership is not that far off Noam Chomsky's points about news coverage of governments in his book, Manufacturing Consent. The long version, or the short version, is news companies are mostly medium to big corporations themselves, and it's not in their interest to challenge government structures too much. Because of their own business imperatives, there are internalized assumptions that permeate down from management, even to the on-air talent. These forces act as subtle, or sometimes not so subtle, coercion to back government, or in this case, the league and the club that happens to be arguably its largest global brand. NBC needs the Premier League more than the Premier League needs NBC right now. Rebecca and the other on-air talent are living their largest paychecks and paydays thanks to NBC holding the Premier League rights. And as you did finally get around to mentioning, NBC also wants to keep its NFL deal, and the Glazers own the team who are currently NFL champs and who have on their roster one of the league's most marketable stars. And despite MSNBC being a liberal-leaning news outlet, NBC as a broadcasting company is very cautious and conservative, likely reflecting Comcast corporate values now, just like before they reflected GE values. The show 30 Rock was a good parody for a reason. You're right about the difference between NBC and some other outlets in that the pundits are also reporters as well. That is a huge factor in their pre-post-game studio sessions, lacking in deeper insight. But in the end, this is about NBC protecting its own business interests, both consciously and unconsciously. And this is what news has done for decades since it has become big business. Kartik, I think that's, I mean, to me, that's letter of the week. But I'm going to move on because I don't want to go down the NBC rabbit hole. Although they've made some improvements since our last podcast. They're definitely listening. But
yeah.
I just don't want to go down there, if that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fine. I agree with a lot that's there. So we'll just we'll just move on.
Me too. Dana Miner says, I am going to paraphrase an old saying, so forgive me if I don't get it quite right. It is virtually impossible to convince a man to see something when his livelihood depends on him not seeing it. Rebecca Lowe, Robbie Earle, and Robbie Musto are paid handsomely by NBC to be cheerleaders for the Premier League. Criticizing the Glazers or any of the other billionaires who run the big clubs could jeopardize NBC's negotiations for the next Premier League TV deal, thereby jeopardizing their cushy jobs. That may be a cynical take on things, but how else can you account for such elitist corporate garbage coming from the mouths of two formerly working class men who fought their way to the highest rung of the football ladder and a former TV reporter who used to walk to school with Peter Crouch? They know what side their bread is buttered on, and they are not going to do anything to upset things. Nick says, I love the most recent podcast episode, and I could not agree more with the points you were making regarding the shocking NBC coverage of the Man United supporters protest. I wanted to touch on Robbie Earle's comments mocking what fan ownership would look like. Does Robbie Earle not know the history of one of his former clubs who he played nearly 10 years for? Wimbledon FC was controversially moved from Wimbledon to Milton Keynes in 2001 by their greedy owner. The supporters were devastated and decided to form their own club, Wimbledon AFC, in 2002. Since 2002, that club has been hugely successful, working its way up to League One, and has plans to build a new 20,000-seat stadium. That is all fan-owned, another clear example that this model works. Robbie Earle sounded even more ignorant when completely ignoring the success story of Wimbledon AFC, which I would have assumed he would be well aware of. Love the show. Keep up the great work. Rich Milner says, I really enjoyed your discussion. As I listened to the studio crew on Sunday, it seemed their message was supporters' concerns bad, vulture cup capitalists good. Their lack of appreciation of the issues involved was startling. Disco George says, I missed out on all the fun on Sunday morning. I slept in until noon and regret nothing. So I got most of my information from ESPN FC, YouTube clips, and podcasts later that night or on Monday and Tuesday. The reporting overall in this story seemed to be really fragmented, which isn't totally surprising considering that most pundits and presenters aren't used to reporting on breaking news with that amount of moving parts. It is weird, though, that NBC didn't do a quick timeline of the Man United protests over the years. I'd forgotten about a lot of the stuff that happened during the Ferguson years, for example, until I was reminded about it. That helped me better understand why that Sunday's events went down the way they did. Of course, given how NBC has treated some other controversial topics in the other sports that they cover, I'm not totally shocked. Moving on, Alex G says, I think your surprise at NBC's coverage of the protests at Manchester are out of touch with how American sports media works. Whether it's right or wrong, no rights holder is going against the league that's keeping the lights on. Of course, ESPN can say whatever they want, and NBC wants to keep the Premier League for the next contract. Stan Kroenke, Joel Glazer, and John Henry will have a say in that contract. Sky Sports has a lot more flexibility because, as far as I know, the chances of the Premier League leaving them is significantly smaller than the Premier League going to the 50 other streaming options we have in the USA. Mercator says, switched over to Sky since I tuned in to watch the Arsenal. Not some drone shot of a mob at Old Trafford on the split screen. I think you were being a bit hard on NBC, though. The crime was not showing the Arsenal game in full, not having a corporate opinion on how a publicly traded corporation is run. The NBC crew doesn't have that sort of leeway or confrontational nature. They aren't big names like Gary Neville, Jamie Carragher, Jamie Carragher had a flare thrown at him, and his response was disappointment in Liverpool fans for not rioting as well. The Robbies cannot say similar things on American television. NBC always has this facade of serious and professional, but is almost always out of touch. See Bob Costas. ESPN FC spent 5 minutes arguing about how to pronounce hyperbole, but Craig and Stevie couldn't toe a corporate line if their lives depended on it. There is always going to be some trade-off between professionalism and authenticity. I would rather have authenticity and a bit of fun. If I want serious commentary, I can find Arsene Wenger's latest clips on YouTube, but I tune in to watch the match, not to get breaking news. The split screen can wait 20 minutes for halftime. Jim says, thanks for the continued great work on the podcast. I know there are, I know since there are no ads running during the podcast, that this is really a labor of love for you guys and is very much appreciated by listeners such as me. And actually, Jim, just as an aside to you and also other listeners, it's not that we could have ads on this show, and we've been approached by many companies to put ads on the show. I just prefer not to. I mean, if you go to worldsoccertalk.com, there's no banner ads, there's no autoplay videos, there's no ads. And on this podcast, that's just my preferred method, is just to keep it. I mean, from time to time, we might have an advertiser, but it has to be somebody that we know, we trust, we use. So that's the reason why. It's not that it's a labor of love, yes, but also it's a decision on our part not to have advertising at this time. Jim goes on to say, my question to you is, I have not heard much about Amazon Prime and their ongoing engagement with the Premier League. I know they ran a number of games in the UK. Do you have any information about whether Amazon Prime will be a ongoing player in streaming the Premier League? Finally, boo hiss to ESPN Plus for cutting the Derby against Sheffield Wednesday feed in the 5th minute of injury time. What a joke. So, Kartik, let's take a pause there, because we've got some great feedback so far, but we do have a couple of questions. The Amazon Prime, yeah, that's going to continue in the UK. And Amazon Prime in the US, that's always a possibility. They have the money. It's just a matter of, do they make a bid and go for it? And then ESPN Plus, did you catch that, the technical difficulties?
Yeah. And that was a match where the winner stayed up. Well, there was no winner, but Derby stayed up and Sheffield Wednesday went down based on the result of the match. So it was a catastrophic error. Although there's still some, just real quickly, there's still a possibility that Derby could go down and Wickham might stay up in their place due to financial issues.
For those listeners who don't know, so the game was Derby against Sheffield Wednesday. It was 3-3, and it was in the 5th minute of injury time, probably like 30 seconds to go in the game. If Sheffield Wednesday had scored,
they stay up.
Yeah, yes, was it 2-2 or 3-3? But anyway, if Sheffield Wednesday had scored in the last like 30 seconds, Sheffield Wednesday would have stayed up, Derby would have gotten relegated. And all of a sudden, they switched the feed from that game to Crawley against Bolton Wanderers. And then after about 10 seconds, had a technical difficulties message. And we never got to the end of the game. We never saw it. So I think everyone, myself included, went onto the internet.
The match was actually important, too, in that league, in League 2. But, yeah, I had to check the score. So then I thought maybe – and so here's the other thing that was really weird. So I didn't know what was going on. And then when I checked the score, it was full time. So I don't know what actually happened in that last minute or so that was played.
Yeah,
because probably it's not like I got onto a ticker and I picked it up right from when the broadcast was cut.
I think it's hopefully a learning lesson from ESPN's point of view. But I mean, in that first half, at the end of the first half, there was, like, I don't know, 6 or 7 minutes of extra time because of an injury. So by the time the second half kicked off, it started, you mean, probably about almost 10 minutes later than the other games being played at the same time, or were supposed to be played at the same time. So I don't know if it was one of those things where ESPN Plus has kind of a cutoff time where they say, okay, after 10 minutes after the game is over, go ahead and kill that feed and now move it on to the next feed. Whatever it is, it was an embarrassing mistake. Luckily, there was no goal scored. Because if there had been, that would have been holy hell. Oh my gosh, that would have been awful. But hopefully it's a learning lesson from ESPN Plus, and hopefully they'll make sure that doesn't happen again. Jake Hirsch says, I don't love any league because of promotion relegation, even though it's a great aspect of leagues that have it. I love those other leagues because of their history or the great teams or players. I do wish MLS had promotion relegation, though. Daniel says, first off, I love the podcast and have been listening to you guys for a long time now. As one of my favorite YouTubers says, never stop making these. Second, do you think USL will overtake MLS one day? MLS itself seems to be doing its own thing and refuses to implement promotion relegation or give up its D1 sanction. But with USL rebranding the leagues in 2018 into the USL Championship, USL League 1, and USL League 2, which is exactly like the English football model, do you think that it's possible that these leagues one day will have enough financial support and backing to have pro rel? So Kartik, what do you think? Do you think that's possible that USL could at some point in the future be bigger than MLS? And do you think promotion relegation?
No, they will not be bigger than MLS. And I know they've been hearing this for years. And before that, NASL, which I worked in, obviously, being bigger than MLS, not going to happen. MLS has the corporate backing. They have the sponsorship money. They have the TV. There's a lot more to being a major league than just the product on the field. And I can say that from having worked in lower division soccer in this country. And as much as people may think I bash MLS because of my own kind of ideology around the sport and my ideology about open leagues, I do acknowledge that on the business side, they are whatever differences you see on the field between USL and MLS, it's 10 times that on the corporate side. It's 10 times that on the front office side. So one, no. Two, I also think it's very difficult for USL to implement pro rel. I know Jake Edwards, as recently as a couple of days ago, went on Seb Salazar and Herc Gomez's show and discussed it, the Football Americas, on ESPN Plus. They are a franchise-based league. So the leagues, the comparison to the football league, they might be taking the same branding, Championship, League One, League Two, but those are all independent clubs that can move up and down the pyramid and can even move up from the football league to Premier League or down into the National League from the football league. USL sells franchises, and they're a league that is independently owned by another company. So the league is owned by a company that does not have interest in any of the clubs, and the clubs are all franchised. So I think it's very difficult to do up and down, replicate an open system with that kind of corporate governance. I actually think it would be easier in MLS with single entity, where the club owners all have a stake in the league. They don't in USL. So I have hopes that USL will do it. I hope actually USL could compete with MLS, but I'm not optimistic on either front, just giving you a realistic professional view of it.
Next up is John Average Geek. John says, I love my team and do not like the U.S. league model. I understand each U.S. league's history. I understand why MLS is single entity, but I wish the United States Soccer Federation required a path to promotion relegation, even if it's a big multi-tier semi-closed system. Molly says, in regards to the discussions about NBC and the criticism of Manchester United and NBC's coverage, the object is to win games and to make money for the stakeholders. As a person who is in finance, what Rebecca Lowe stated is valid. These fans did not put their money into the club. The Glazers did. In America, the purpose is to make money. You don't get it. It's a business and profits, number one. Fans have no say in how the business is run. The Glazers will never sell. If these supporters think they can pressure the Glazers to sell, then these people are living in fairy tale land. So what do you think about that, Kartik?
Where do I start? First of all, if you say stakeholders, the stakeholders are the supporters of Manchester United Football Club. They have a lot more at stake with that club than the Glazers do. If you're saying the shareholders, that's different. The stakeholders and shareholders are two different things. I respect what Molly is saying from a very American capitalist point of view, but that is not why football clubs exist in the UK. That's not why football clubs exist in Europe.
Well, that's a big one. That's a big one, though, too. I mean, like, and again, to a lot of American business people, they will think this is very strange, Kartik, but the number one purpose of a football club is not to make money. It is to be a community team. It's to be a team that represents that
like
city.
A church or a school in a community. I've said this over and over again that Americans don't, a lot of Americans don't get this, that it is like the churches in small towns in the United States or schools are in kind of small or medium-sized towns in the United States. It's a rallying community institution in Britain, in Germany, in France. It's and I think when you start viewing these things as corporate assets or financial assets or parts of a portfolio, Peter Schmeichel even used that term, then there's no way to reconcile where we are, Molly, and where you are and where a lot of American fans of the sport are, because we're starting from a completely different understanding and perception of what a football club is and what it means, and particularly one like Manchester United. I'm going to restate what I said on Twitter 10 days ago, or Manchester United is one of Britain's great exports. Post-war Britain was a pretty grim place. You know this, Chris. Mm-hmm. And you
I'm not that old, but I do know that.
Your parents can tell you this, right? But post-war Britain was a pretty grim place, and Britain had lost its empire, and there was a lot that about the country that was difficult. And I think that what Britain did to make itself once again relevant culturally, even after they had lost their political influence, they were no longer a superpower on the same level of the United States, or even economically on the level of Germany, was they exported their culture. And I would say the Beatles, James Bond movies, and Manchester United, starting with Munich. Manchester United is on that, Austin Powers, all this stuff. Manchester United is on that scale. So it is a heck of a lot more important than the asset of some family based in Florida that is using it as part of their portfolio. It is. So this isn't just another football club. And again, I'm not a Manchester United fan. In fact, I don't like them on the footballing mm-hmm. side. But this is a cultural, this is a community institution in Salford and in Trafford and that part of Greater Manchester, and it is a one of Britain's most important global cultural exports. So I think once I've stated that, I'm in a completely different place and can't reconcile with the view that, hey, it's a private company owned by its shareholders, or it's a public company really, but a company owned by its shareholders, and what they want is what matters.
Next up is Anonymous, and he or she says, I wanted to email to say, although I'm not a Chelsea fan, congratulations to Christian Pulisic making the final. This is a stunning accomplishment for a US men's national team player, and he is well on his way to becoming the most accomplished US player on a club level, and he's only 22. Chelsea has one of the best group of young players in the game, and I'm glad he is part of it. Having said that, I feel the US Federation and US men's national team fans are going to use accomplishment as a make him the one and only savior of US men's national team soccer. I understand making him the face of the team, but I feel everyone needs to level expectations. Your thoughts?
I don't think he's the best U.S. player right now. I don't actually. Maybe he's back in the top five. I didn't have him in my top three a couple of weeks ago. So I understand the various reasons for making him the face, particularly that he plays in the Premier League and he might have the right kind of check the right boxes to market to the whole country.
He's also the most accessible, right? Most visible player. So you would argue that like Tyler Adams or Gio Reyna or Weston McKennie.
Well, I don't argue Adams necessarily is better, maybe. I think Adams is a smarter player. I think he's a more heady player, but he's got a lot of the attributes number sixes have, like the Ndidis or like the Conte. Conte plays with Pulisic. But I would argue for sure Brooks is better right now. I think McKennie is better. And I think, although he hasn't played well in the last few games, I think Serginho Dest has done very well, better than I expected. This right back in his first season at Barcelona. Now, granted, two of those guys are dual nationals, right? Who were not born in the U.S., but McKennie was born in the U.S., came through an MLS academy. Is I think a better player overall, although he plays a different role than Pulisic. But I get it. None of those guys are in the Premier League, actually.
Well, that's probably a big part of it. Well, the other thing is you're only as good as your team or your teammates, right? So Christian Pulisic, there's no doubt, is a talented player, you know, one of the best Americans, but maybe not the best yet. He's still young. He could reach that level, perhaps. But then you have, say, Tyler Adams at RB Leipzig, or, you mean, Weston. I mean, Juventus is having a tough year, so on and so forth. So a lot of these players, I mean, Dortmund's had an up and down year. So I mean, Pulisic is very fortunate to be on a very, very good Chelsea team under a fantastic manager. I mean, Tuchel's doing an amazing job.
He's playing with a guy, and I've written an article for another website talking about the fact that he, and I know all these Americans didn't like Mason Mount and thought that he was getting favoritism from Lampard and that he was taking Pulisic's spot when they don't even have the same attributes as players. So I don't know why people were thinking this, but I think he's coming into his own because he's playing with Mason Mount. Mason Mount as a 8/10 is the best guy England has produced in that role since Steven Gerrard. And I think it has the potential to be better than Gerrard, believe it or not. I know that might be blasphemy to a lot of people listening, but I just, and people who follow me on Twitter know what I think, what I've thought of Mount for 2.5 years since he was at Derby, and even made the unfortunate comment that I couldn't believe he was English. He was so technical and was so good at reading the game and so good at passing. So I think Pulisic has benefited from playing with him, and now he's also benefited from playing with N'Golo Kante, who does a lot of the dirty work that we know. My big criticism of Pulisic is that his positioning sense is not quite as good as I'd like it to be. He doesn't read the game as quickly out of possession, but when you have Kante behind you, that, and you have Mount alongside you, that really that kind of mitigates that. But yeah, he's doing great, and I think, like I said earlier in the podcast, every American's going to be rooting for Chelsea, except for the few Manchester City fans in the country like myself. I think it's a big moment for U.S. soccer if Pulisic wins the cup and he wins the European Cup, and he is the he is on the pitch when they win it, which I think is very possible, because Tuchel knows how to manage his minutes, and it could be a 120-minute match. So Americans shouldn't get discouraged if they see Kai Havertz is starting instead of Pulisic, or Timo Werner or Ziyech is starting instead of him, because he will play, and he will likely be a guy that Tuchel's thinking can make the difference in the most important moments of that match.
All right, three more comments to go. And next up is Matt. Matt says, I recently began listening to the podcast for the past few months, and I really enjoy it. I recently bought a TV antenna and was surprised by the amount of national broadcasts there are this past weekend. We obviously have national broadcasts for Liga MX, and in a World Cup year, we will see national broadcasts too on Fox. However, we had two Premier League games on NBC last weekend, the NWSL Challenge Cup final on CBS, and then two MLS games back-to-back on ABC. I usually stream my games personally, not through the TV, but this was just an observation of mine from the weekend. I am all for more national broadcasts, even though I fully don't expect the number we had this past weekend. It would be nice to have another game nationally televised, such as MLS or NWSL, once a week when the season runs, just like NBC is giving us one Premier League game a week nationally. We would like to see that. That does help grow the game. That does help introduce people who may not otherwise be watching or streaming, subscribe to a streaming service. I just don't see that happening anytime soon as far as any big changes. I mean, we've got the Euros this summer, and we've got some other games to look forward to. Of course, the Olympics and much more. But good points, Matt, but I just don't see anything changing anytime soon. Maybe ABC with La Liga. We'll see. Curtis says, wow, the fact that ESPN Plus has acquired rights to all La Liga games in both English and Spanish is simply fantastic. Let's see what streaming looks like beginning this coming August. ESPN Plus will show all games from the Bundesliga. Italian Serie A will be on CBS. Spain's La Liga will be, along with the FA Cup matches and championship matches from England, among others, on ESPN Plus. Paramount Plus will continue to show matches from Argentina, Brazil, in both the Champions League and Europa League. Peacock Premium will continue to show matches from the Premier League and, of course, Tudo N A Extra. We'll show key matches in English from Liga MX. If you're a soccer fan in the US and subscribe to at least one of these services, I subscribe to all three, by the way, you simply cannot wait for the ball to roll come August. Like the song says, what a time to be alive. I simply cannot wait. Forget college football. And then one final note, the ball is on the ground and rolling. We're on the air and cruising. Let's do 90. And that was Adrian Garcia Marquez, Liga MX commentator on FS1, FS2, and Fox Deportes. Last but not least, David says, I am here. I'm a La Liga guy. Always have been, always will be. So excited about the move to ESPN, but have a couple questions that maybe you guys can answer. We all know beIN Sports hasn't been the greatest, but most La Liga fans around the world are diehard Ray Hudson fans like myself and have been used to having Phil Shane next to him for the call. Any idea if they will try and bring them over? Also, I mostly watch La Liga TV via Sling TV. It has great content throughout the day and has great studio wraparound coverage of matches. They break down every game, every team, and not just the big boys. You know, do you know if La Liga TV will be available to us once the switch happens? It's owned by the league, so I would hope they would put some of it on ESPN Plus, like they do with the Bundesliga and Serie A, though these are usually just summing up the past matches, the past match days, which really isn't what La Liga TV is. So in terms of La Liga TV, as of the recording of this podcast, we don't know yet. I would imagine that that would be included. But whether or not ESPN Plus decides to broadcast that, we'll have to wait and see. It's too early to tell right now. Ray Hudson and Phil Shane, Kartik, what do you think? Do they make the move? Is ESPN going to be wise enough to bring them over?
Yeah, Phil Shane has worked for ESPN before, but I think now in this era of remote technology, you can keep Ray Hudson lives in Fort Lauderdale. Phil Shane lives in suburb west of Fort Lauderdale, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Miami area. You could use them from home. I mean, we've seen Nikki Bandini, right? But last week, yep, on Serie A, she did her co-commentary from home, and home is in the UK, by the way, for her, not in the US. So there's the possibility, there's a technology to do it. I just don't know if ESPN is going to use this as an opportunity to promote their own talent that they already have. They have a lot of soccer talent in the building in Bristol and nearby in Connecticut and Massachusetts. This is really a tough decision, honestly, because they're synonymous. Phil Shane and Ray Hudson are synonymous with La Liga, particularly Barcelona fans like them. I think more than Real Madrid and Atleti fans. But then ESPN has the infrastructure and the talent already on staff. I don't think they really have to hire anyone, if I'm honest with you, to do La Liga. They have people there that can do it. And they spend a lot of time already on the ESPN FC show talking about La Liga. And actually, in Kay Murray and Dan Thomas, you have two presenters that have presented La Liga matches previously at other networks, and in other entities, and both have an array of knowledge about the league. So this is a tough one. I mean, I'm really kind of it's a toss up for me, and it's really up to ESPN, and I think they are going to grapple with the decision also, and I'm not sure they're going to make it right away. Right?
They've got time. Right? About it.
Yeah,
it's one of those things that. I mean, these rights are costing an enormous amount of money for ESPN to bring these rights to La Liga rights to consumers in the United States. And you mean they've had layoffs in the past? You mean at ESPN they have a full staff that's there and ready and probably salivating over this opportunity? I mean, Seb Salazar is one person that just stands out as somebody who would be a fantastic host of some of the games. Dan Thomas, who used to work for Real Madrid TV, as did Kay too. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of experience there. There's a lot of already informed knowledge of that league. But Ray is somebody, is one of a kind. It's almost like folklore at this stage in terms of La Liga. Having him on, and if I remember correctly, he used to work for ESPN also after the Miami, or maybe before the Miami Fusion days, but he did some commentating for ESPN in the past. But having Ray on for an El Clasico, joined by Phil, I mean, they're a great partnership together. Not everybody likes them, but I think they're really, really special. I think that can make the difference between appealing to the mainstream audience. The mainstream audience that would be captivated, who may not have watched La Liga that much and is tuning into ABC to watch El Clasico. And here's Ray talking about all his metaphors and his poetry. I think that could really resonate with consumers and the viewers.
Yeah. So I could see Phil Shane and Ray Hudson calling matches, but then the studio being hosted by either Dan Thomas or Kay Murray, which would then open the door for Seb Salazar to do more ESPN FC shows. He does Friday pretty regularly now, but that's the only show he does weekly. And then, of course, Football America's where, since you mentioned, I'm going to put it out there on this podcast, even though it's not relevant necessarily to La Liga. Seb Salazar is the only presenter that covers American soccer and a mainstream broadcaster that's telling it like it is, in my opinion. He's doing a phenomenal job. Did it again, him and Herc Gomez, who's, of course, the studio talent, former U.S. men's national team player. They're the only two guys doing a show that is telling it like it is. They did it again this week with MLS. And I can't speak highly enough that I think it's important when we talk about the Carragers and the Nevilles and the people like that over in the UK that we give love to those few that are very courageous here to step out like that. And I think Seb and Herc are those two guys here. And there are others, but they're leading the line right now, so to speak.
Yeah, and fair play to ESPN for allowing these guys to share their opinions, because a lot of other broadcasters probably would pull them in a little bit and say, hey, you mean don't go too critical about the state of US soccer right now, or let's kind of taper it down or kind of calm down a little bit. But no, these guys speak their minds and they speak intelligently. Not just Seb Salazar and Herc Gomez, but there's many others. But all right, Carter, let's wrap it up just because it's been a good long podcast with some great information and some fantastic feedback. Probably, to me at least, one of our best episodes ever, as far as some really, really good feedback about a variety of topics and some really fantastic letters there from the listeners. Listeners, we do want you to have your say. So anything in regards to watching soccer on television, streaming or apps, you can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. Kartik, heading into another weekend of football from around the world, the French League, right? And the Spanish League.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, those are our two saviors right now in terms of title races. Mistakes happening on both sides, you mean, in terms of, I think clubs feeling the pressure, making mistakes, letting goals in. We saw that with Levante against Barcelona, an incredible 3-3 game there midweek. But what should we look out for this weekend as far as those title races that appeal to you? And then what should our listeners do?
Yeah, so look out for PSG. I cannot stress this enough. Since we've talked about media, we haven't talked about this enough. The way Pochettino's team unraveled at the end of the season when Leicester won the title, the Spurs team and the same kind of demonstrativeness on the pitch we're seeing at PSG, and we saw it in the dying minutes of the match over the weekend. We saw it in the dying minutes, obviously, against Manchester City, also in the Champions League. So I have a feeling the title race in France, I don't want to jinx it because I do want Lille to win it, but I have a feeling it may not really be on. Lille might get 3 points this weekend and PSG will drop points again and that'll be it. Now in Spain, I think it's a whole different matter. Sevilla has won on Wednesday. Atleti has held off Sociedad in spite of Simeone's caution on Wednesday, and then we've got Real Madrid playing today on Thursday. So I think anything can happen. I think Barcelona is probably out, and Sevilla is probably out. So it's coming down to – and actually, Sevilla wouldn't be out if they hadn't given up that late goal, right, and mm-hmm. against Real Madrid. Yeah, they would be very much in the driver's seat in terms of being there if Atleti slipped up. So watch Spain closely. Watch France closely, because I think PSG might just be coming apart mentally, and they're getting silly red cards. There's just a lot of chippiness. Maybe Pochettino got them back together this week, but I think my sense is they're collapsing. It reminds me so much of the Spurs year when Leicester won the title, when Spurs were on their back and then just completely collapsed to the point where they even got beat by a relegated Newcastle team on the last day of the season, 4-0 or something, an already relegated Newcastle team. So I think France is on, but Lille might clinch it this week if they do their job against Saint-Étienne and PSG falter again. And then keep an eye on Spain and enjoy your football.
Hey, it's Dr. Rupi, host of the Doctor's Kitchen podcast, where we talk about food, medicine, and how to improve your health today. The podcast is currently being sponsored by MasterChef Australia, only on W, and it starts on the 1st of August. And W is also where you can watch all the global MasterChefs first. Check it out on Freeview, Freesat, Sky, and Virgin Media, as well as UK TV Play. Go check it out.